Today is Wednesday, January 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. U.S. President Biden orders his administration to buy 10 million courses of the Pfizer COVID-19 pill.
I'm directing my team to work with Pfizer to double our order from 10 million to 20 million treatment courses.
A Human Rights Watch researcher says Tigrayans deported by Saudi Arabia back to Ethiopia are being abused.
I mean, the kind of mistreatment is pretty terrifying. Levels of abuse, beatings, restrictions on freedom of movement for no reason.
And North Korea tests a suspected ballistic missile. We'll have these stories and more next. President Joe Biden has directed his administration to buy an additional 10 million courses of Pfizer's COVID-19 pill Paxlovid, bringing the total to at least 20 million courses. He addressed the American public on Tuesday as COVID cases in the U.S. surged to record levels following the holidays. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wittakuskwara has this report.
Residents of Washington, D.C. turned out for a snowball fight earlier this week, a sign of normalcy in a winter marked by soaring COVID-19 cases in the United States yet again. Fueled by the Omicron variant, on Monday, the nation's coronavirus cases reached a world record of 1 million detected in 24 hours, according to a report by the Johns Hopkins University.
Today, I'm directing my team to work with Pfizer to double our order from 10 million to 20 million treatment courses to be delivered in the months ahead.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden outlined his administration strategy to address Omicron. In addition to buying more Pfizer COVID-19 pills, he promised to make booster shots and testing more widely available. With Americans having to wait in long lines to get tested, Biden has been blamed for delays and shortages. His administration has not given details on the distribution of the promised half a billion free at-home test kits. Testing is considered key to limit Omicron spread and reduce hospitalization. Dr. William Schaffner is an infectious disease professor at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine.
We can't do very much about inhibiting the spread of this extraordinarily contagious virus. And if it only produces mild disease, we could, if you will, quote, tolerate that while we try to continue to prevent these hospitalizations.
More evidence is emerging that Omicron causes milder symptoms than previous variants, in some places resulting in lower death rates despite soaring case numbers. World Health Organization incident manager Abdi Mohamud.
We are seeing more and more studies pointing out that Omicron is infecting the upper part of the body, unlike other ones, the lung, who has been causing severe pneumonia. It can be a good news, but we really require more studies to prove that.
The U.S. has donated more than 315 million vaccine doses globally, while pledging a total of 1.2 billion doses. Yet some health experts say wealthy nations are not doing enough to vaccinate the world and prevent the emergence of new variants. Dr. Peter Hotez is the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine.
Until we redouble our commitment to vaccinate the African continent, Southeast Asia, and Latin America, we're always going to have this problem. And that's what has to be prioritized. And so far, neither the U.S. government or the G7 countries have really made that commitment.
On Monday, U.S. health authorities approved Pfizer's booster shot for children as young as 12, with a final approval expected in the coming days. Patsy Wittakuskwara, VOA News.
Australia documented on Wednesday a daily record of more than 50,000 COVID cases. Hospital admissions continue to rise. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
This is the first time that daily COVID-19 case numbers have exceeded 50,000 in Australia. The most populous state, New South Wales, recorded 35,000 new infections on Wednesday. Neighbouring Victoria reported 17,636 new cases, most are caused by the Omicron variant. Health authorities believe that case numbers will continue to increase in the weeks to come and will plateau in February. In Queensland, health officials warned that infections would surge, certainly into the hundreds of thousands. Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk said in most of the cases, symptoms were mild and people were recovering very, very quickly. Testing clinics have been unable to cope with the huge demand for screening, and rapid antigen tests are in short supply. Hospitalizations are increasing in parts of Australia, but officials believe most patients in intensive care units have the Delta variant. Susan Pearce, Deputy Secretary of the New South Wales Health Department, says demands on the hospital system will grow.
We expect for the next several weeks that we will see that pressure. We also expect, though, that once it starts to decline, it will likely decline quite quickly. But we have got some challenging weeks ahead of us. Everything that can be done to support our staff will be done as we work through this. What we've demonstrated during the course of this pandemic now for 2 years is that our health system is capable of almost anything.
Despite the surge, theatres in Sydney and Melbourne are declaring on with the show and reopening. An international cricket match between Australia and England in Sydney attracted thousands of spectators. In total, about 550,000 COVID-19 infections have been diagnosed in Australia since the pandemic began. 2,282 people have died. Australia's political leaders have said that the country's best defence against rising coronavirus cases is high vaccination levels. More than 91% of the population over age 16 is fully inoculated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
There were protests in France as President Emmanuel Macron has targeted people who have not gotten COVID-19 vaccinations. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more.
French President Emmanuel Macron has provoked outcries in Parliament and protests from election rivals by using a vulgarity to describe his strategy for pressuring vaccine refusers. In an interview published by French newspaper Le Parisien, Macron used a French word meaning to rile or to bug when referring to France's unvaccinated people, adding, "We will continue to rile to the end." The president made the explosive remark as lawmakers are heatedly debating new measures that would allow only the vaccinated to enjoy leisure activities such as eating out. His use of earthy language, more commonly heard at the counters of French cafes, further complicates the already difficult passage in Parliament of the government's planned new vaccine pass. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland gives a speech on Wednesday to update Americans on the investigation into the January 6th insurrection ahead of the one-year anniversary of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell tells me that Garland is expected to talk about how the Justice Department will defend the Constitution and prosecute those responsible for the attack.
So already, as we know, the other branch of government, the legislative branch, the House Select Committee, is investigating what happened. But it's the Justice Department that kind of has the ability to actually impose penalties and bring about justice. So he is basically going to assure both his workforce and also the American people, amid criticism, of course, that the Justice Department is seized with the matter.
And when you say amid criticism, can you elaborate a little bit on the criticism that we're talking about?
I think the gauntlet was really thrown in late December when three top legal scholars, including two former federal prosecutors and a constitutional lawyer from Harvard, basically noted that although the Justice Department has charged more than 720 people, these people have all been rather low level, kind of like foot soldiers. And the belief is that this was orchestrated by higher officials, perhaps people as high as the Trump White House, and they would like to see the Justice Department get to the bottom of that.
And what has happened so far with the high-level supporters of the former president and the insurrection and the panel, the way the investigation's going? Have they been successful at all in their efforts to get these high-level type officials to testify?
No, these guys have been rather comically uncooperative. Steve Bannon has refused to cooperate. Roger Stone has refused to cooperate. Former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows initially turned over emails and then refused to cooperate. So they are running into quite a few hurdles in investigating this.
And are we any closer today than we were almost a year ago when this started to knowing how this all came about?
I think that's quite subjective. But I think the short answer is yes. And I think that does come through the evidence provided by former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who did turn over communications between him and members of the Trump family, high-level Fox News personalities, who were basically urging him to urge the president to call the whole thing off as it was unfolding to the horror of Americans and people around the world.
That was VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell. She was speaking to me on Wednesday. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin remains wary of changing Senate rules to advance a voting rights bill. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has that report.
With Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer signaling he wants to move forward on changing the Senate's filibuster rules, a key moderate Democrat is again in the way. Senator Joe Manchin told reporters Tuesday,
I'm not agreeing to any of this.
On Monday, Schumer said the Senate will debate and consider easing the filibuster rules by January 17th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, as Democrats push for voting legislation, but Manchin remains skeptical.
The need for us to protect democracy as we know it, and the Senate, as it has operated for 232 years, are extremely, extremely high bars that we must be very careful for willing to cross those.
Under current rules, Democrats in the 50-50 Senate require 60 votes to overcome a Republican filibuster that's held up the election and voting rights package. Mike Gracia, Washington.
North Korea tested what's believed to be a ballistic missile on Wednesday. It's the first launch of the new year. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
North Korea welcomed the new year with a missile launch. Japanese officials say it traveled for 500 kilometers before splashing into the sea off Korea's east coast. The North has frequently tested short-range ballistic missiles since mid-2019. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida called the launches truly regrettable in comments to reporters. The test comes just days after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un delivered an end-of-year speech where he pledged to continue bolstering national defenses to deal with an unstable international situation. But most of the speech focused on Kim's plans to jumpstart his country's economy. It contained none of the usual bombastic rhetoric or threats toward the United States. Mason Ritchie is a professor at Seoul's Hankuk University of Foreign Studies.
Clearly, they're broadcasting a sense of self-reliance and continuing to remain inwardly turned in some way. And then to follow that up with a missile launch is a sort of classic kind of cognitive dissonance move that they tend to pull off.
North Korea likely has additional motivations for such a launch, including shoring up domestic political support, testing key new technologies, and demonstrating deterrence against the United States and its allies. North Korea has not conducted an intercontinental ballistic missile test or nuclear test since 2017. Such a move would presumably risk a firmer response by the United States. North Korea is prohibited from any ballistic missile activity, including launches of any range, by a series of United Nations Security Council resolutions. But since 2019, the U.S. has downplayed the North's short-range launches, presumably in an attempt to preserve the possibility for future talks. North Korea has ignored repeated offers by the U.S. to restart negotiations, saying Washington must first drop its hostile policy. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
China has reported a drop in COVID-19 infections in the northern city of Xi'an, which has been under tight lockdown for the past 2 weeks, a move that disrupted the lives of some 13 million people who live there. The National Health Commission announced just 35 new cases in the city, down from 95 the previous day. It marks a steady decline since daily new cases topped 100. Officials say they have basically cut off community transmission. With the Beijing Olympics starting in early February, China is doubling down on efforts to prevent any new outbreak that could affect the event. Israel says its coronavirus infection spiked to a new high. The government reported Wednesday that more than 11,900 new infections were diagnosed a day earlier, more than the previous high of 11,345 set on September 2nd. Israel has imposed restrictions 4 weeks aimed at boosting vaccination rates in the country, which had been a leader early on in the pandemic. The government is now easing restrictions to prevent the economy from shutting down. In the Midwestern U.S. city of Chicago, officials have canceled classes after the teachers' union voted to switch to remote learning due to high COVID-19 cases. The move comes amid tensions over safety protocols in U.S. schools. Officials in the country's third largest school district say they won't return to online instruction district-wide, as it was devastating for children's learning and mental health. The union says the district's safety protocols are lacking and that both teachers and students are vulnerable. Sweden has created an agency to combat disinformation as the country's September general election approaches. The mission of the Swedish Psychological Defense Agency is to, quote, defend our open and democratic society and free opinions by identifying, analyzing, and responding to inappropriate influences and other misleading information directed at Sweden or Swedish interests, end quote. The agency started on January 1st. Human Rights Watch says Ethiopian authorities are detaining and mistreating thousands of ethnic Tigrayans deported from Saudi Arabia. HRW's Nadia Hardman tells me that Ethiopian authorities have arbitrarily detained and forcibly disappeared thousands of ethnic Tigrayans recently deported from Saudi Arabia. She says Saudi Arabia should stop holding Tigrayans in abhorrent conditions and deporting them to Ethiopia.
I interviewed 23 Tigrayan deportees, people that were deported between December 2020 and September 2021 from Saudi Arabia, that are now in detention across various facilities, informal and formal, in Ethiopia. I mean, we're talking about at least 8 government-run centers that we know about in Addis Ababa, and then 2 other facilities outside where people were intercepted. Deportees on their way from Addis trying to get back home to Tigray, but they were picked up at various checkpoints and thrown into, I mean, effectively disappeared into detention facilities in the south in an area called Shone and in Samara, which is in the Afar region of Ethiopia. I mean, the kind of mistreatment is pretty terrifying levels of abuse, beatings, restrictions on freedom of movement for no reason. I mean, people were sent back home and obviously expected to be able to get home. But were either held in these reception centers in Addis, where they were first collected, and or intercepted on the way back to Tigray.
I understand that you did interview these 23 people, 20 men, I believe, and 3 women.
Yeah.
Do you believe that this is representative of thousands of other Tigrayans who have been returning home?
Yes, we do. I mean, everyone I spoke to, I asked to give an estimation of how many other people were in the facilities with them. And they were talking about hundreds in each facility and sometimes thousands. As I said, we know that there are at least up to 8 government-run centers in Addis. Of course, I didn't speak to people in all of those centers. I spoke to people in 3, all of which had restrictions on freedom of movement. And then to these 2 centers outside, where, again, people were talking about thousands of others also locked up. The ones outside Addis are particularly terrifying because there is no humanitarian access, as you know, to these areas of Ethiopia. Added on to that, in late November, we documented this pretty terrifying incident where in one of the centers, in the middle of the night, armed federal police entered the facility of Tigrayan deportees, rounded up young men, forced them to buses and to an area called Jimma in Oromia region of Ethiopia, where they are now being forced to work on the coffee farm plantations in that area.
Who is directing this kind of activity? Have you been able to figure that out with the government of Ethiopia?
The people I spoke to said it was the federal and members of the Afar regional police in the Samara Center, but generally the federal police seems to be the entity that is in charge, at least in part or in whole, directing the management of these centers and facilities, and they're present and they're running, and they're also the ones that detainees told me are responsible for the beatings and abuses. We wrote to the federal police commissioner. I received a response from the spokesperson of the federal police commission who said that they did not intend to reply.
That was Human Rights Watch researcher Nadia Hardman. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of planets, you probably picture them orbiting a star. But did you know there's a classification of planets called rogue, orphan, or nomad planets? These are planets that are much like those in our solar system, but rather than orbiting any star and being part of a planetary system, they are free-floating in space. Not many of these reclusive planets have been found, so they are considered to be quite rare. The European Southern Observatory reports that scientists who use several of their telescopes as well as other facilities have spotted at least 70 rogue planets that make up what they consider to be the largest group of orphan planets in the Milky Way. It's believed that these objects have been ejected from their original home planetary system at some time in the distant past. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Kazakhstan's president has declared a two-week state of emergency in the Central Asian nation's biggest city of Almaty and in a western province where protests turned violent. Reuters correspondent Brian Wood has that story.
The Kazakh government resigned on Wednesday as protests erupted across the country over a fuel price hike. Police clashed with protesters in the nation's biggest city, Almaty. And security forces fired tear gas and stun grenades to stop hundreds of people from storming the mayor's office. In a video message to the country on Tuesday, President Kasym Jomart Tokayev urged protesters to behave rationally.
Calls to attack the government and military buildings are completely illegal. This is a crime that could be punished. The government will not fall, but we want mutual trust and dialogue rather than conflict.
Many Kazakhs fill their cars with liquid petroleum gas because price caps keep it cheaper than gasoline. But the government lifted those caps over the weekend, arguing that the low price was unsustainable. In response to protests, the government did a U-turn and announced it was restoring the price cap to less than half the market price. But that hasn't stopped the protests. On Wednesday, Deputy Alikhan Smaylov was appointed as acting prime minister. And the president's office has issued a state of emergency and said Almaty and the western Mangistau province would be put under curfew and movement restrictions for 2 weeks. Dissent is rare in the oil-rich Central Asian nation, as public protest is illegal without notice.
That was Brian Wood of Reuters. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Damme. Canada announced on Tuesday two agreements totaling $31.5 billion to compensate First Nations children who were taken from their families and put into the child welfare system. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reports. That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson.
Canada said it will spend more than $31 billion to fix its child welfare system and compensate Indigenous families harmed by it. It's the largest class action settlement in Canadian history. Tuesday's pledge affects what may be hundreds of thousands of First Nations people, some of whom were removed from their homes as children and put in the system. Patty Hadju is Canada's Minister of Indigenous Affairs and says a deal in principle is the first step towards healing.
No amount of compensation can make up for the traumas that First Nations children, families, and communities have experienced, but this will begin the process of healing and it will support families on that journey of healing. It will support individuals who have experienced extraordinary loss and harm.
The announcement comes almost 15 years after a human rights complaint by the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society. In 2016, a tribunal found that the federal government allocated fewer funds for child and family services of Indigenous people than for others, pushing more Indigenous children into foster care. Canada admitted its systems were discriminatory, but repeatedly fought orders to pay compensation and fund reforms. The government's legal strategy came under increased scrutiny last year after hundreds of unmarked graves were discovered at the sites of former residential schools. Until as recently as 1996, Canada's residential school system separated Indigenous children from their families and sent them to boarding schools where they were malnourished, beaten, and sexually abused.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. That's all we have for you today. This has been VOA's International Edition. On behalf of managing editor Kate Dawson, producer Nadia Taha, and the entire production team, thanks for being here. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington.